Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand puts him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
I'm Gareth A. Davies. You're listening to TalkSport's Fight Night podcast. Joining me this week is Adam Catterall and, of course, Ben Davison, former trainer of Tyson Fury's. We began the show this week by talking about the biggest news of the week. Yep, it had just broken. Tyson Fury and Oleksandr Usyk had agreed to a 70-30 split. We discussed.
It is difficult. Of course, it's very difficult. I think that it looks as though the big chunk of that is solved, and that's something that we can be positive about. It looks like the 70-30, the split, isn't going to be an issue. The nuts and bolts, obviously, will probably need sorting out. However, you would like to think that the negotiations that have been taking place between the two teams for quite a while, you would like
Since
to think...
Since last summer, by the way.
You would like to think that some of those nuts and bolts are already sorted. So, hopefully... Hopefully, as you said, at the start of next week or mid next week, it can all be actually finalised. The business of boxing, unfortunately, it's
the Wild West.
Yeah,
you
know,
has been.
When you're getting paid or you're coming through and you're on X amount per round and you're going out there and, you know, you're enjoying yourself. Once the fighters get to the point where there's serious money involved and they realise, actually, this is a business.
Mm.
I've seen it so many times. A lot of the passion for the sport, or a lot of fighters get disheartened, and it's where relationships get broken down and things start going amiss. So,
is it greed?
I just think it's, in terms of this situation, is this situation greed? It's hard to say, isn't it?
Or is it end games? Is it power broking?
Tyson,
do you agree with 70-30? Because Adam and I had a back and forth before the show where we completely disagreed. I think 70-30 at Wembley in favour of Tyson Fury is okay, in my view.
I think it's okay.
He holds the power in this fight.
I think 60-40 is fair. Yeah. I think 70-30 is okay.
Yeah. But he without him... And as he said, and this is a fact, if Usyk fights Daniel Dubois and Fury sits on the sidelines, not that I want that, not that anyone wants that, he's only going to earn $1.5 million, isn't he?
But it's easy to say that, but, you know, it's like if...
So it does force Usyk's hand, in my view.
It does to a degree.
It does to a degree.
Yep. You have to look at, like, the WBC, in their rules, I think the split for a mandatory starts at 70-30. We know with the Dillian White situation that they made an adjustment there. So if you looked at it on paper, you'd say, well, Usyk
should deserve more. Yeah.
For sure. So I think me personally, and everybody's going to have a difference of opinion, and the reality is in business, you're only worth what you can get. So, you know, if Tyson couldn't get 70-30, you're only worth 60-40. He's gone and got himself 70-30, so he's worth 70-30.
Yeah, because, in my view, because Usyk and his team have looked at it and thought, let's just take it. We feel like we've got a good chance anyway. Maybe, because they're talking about a two-fight deal, remember? That's quite clear. And it will probably be in the Middle East later in the year, the second fight, if it's made. It probably will be 50-50. They will... probably come back because there's more money available over there.
Usyk, for me, the way... It's been really interesting to see how this has played out this week, and I know that obviously you know Tyson extremely well. We've all had time in Tyson's company. The way that I look at this week, Alexander Usyk comes across as the guy that is chasing the legacy. He's chasing the undisputed fight. He's the person that is giving the advantages away when it comes to the financials, when it comes to the physicals, when it comes to all these things, fighting in the guy's back garden, all this type of stuff. He's the guy that is chasing that down. It felt a little bit this week that Tyson maybe was, like you say, using that muscle, that financial muscle, that clout,
go and fight him, to see how much he could get out of the particular situation. Exactly, go and fight him.
But that rubs
fans
up the wrong way.
I'm not saying it's right.
It does, yeah.
Absolutely. I think there were points this week where a lot of his own fans were turning against him. Because he was teetering on the rim. Because they're saying, come on, we followed you.
But what was the conversation we just had just a moment before? That this is a business.
But then again, it's a business. So
Tyson playing that game did go and get him, made himself worth 70-30. Yeah. And I understand why, Adam, you feel like you think that Usyk deserves to be appreciated for those things that you just mentioned. And I 100% agree with that. Yeah.
And obviously the things that he's achieved in boxing.
Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, it is a business. And, you know, at this moment in time, Tyson is in a good position, as it's shown. What we should be more concentrated on, I think, is the fact that it looks like that split, you know, they've got to the end of that. Like you say, Usyk has said, not a problem. I will step up to the mark and that's not going to bother me. So... It's the nuts and bolts of it.
Do we have enough time to make
this
fight?
This is the thing for me.
I doubt it. To make it for April the 29th, it's not long, is it?
But like you said, the fight has been being spoke about and talked about since the end of last year. So all that time has been promotion to a degree. Of course, you know, there's lots of things that need sorting out and to sell out Wembley Stadium, first of all, never mind sorting out the undercard and pay-per-view prices and all of these kind of things. So, but like I said, again, you would like to think that some of these conversations have been being had along the way as the two teams have been in negotiations to...
But the optics for the sport aren't good, are they? That's the thing. The optics haven't looked good. That's what we're talking about. Whatever's going on behind the scenes, hopefully they get it over the line. You know, compared to other sports, it's always very different. And as you say, it's a sport, but primarily, underline it, the bigger the fight, the more money, it's more a business. Ben joined us pretty much for the entire show this week, gave us many brilliant insights, but some of the insight he gave us was into our reaction on Conor Benn and his interview with Piers Morgan and how that felt and how we all felt about where Conor Benn now sits. Here's me, Ben and Adam breaking it all down.
Conor Benn spoke exclusively to Piers Morgan on Talk TV. He revealed how his mental health has been affected since failing two drug tests in the build-up to a proposed fight with Chris Eubank Jr. in October last year.
You know, I felt like 7 years of hard work and sacrifice and leaving my family and the image I maintained was just, you know, ruined at somebody else's incompetence. You know, it was, it's been hard for the family.
When you say you didn't think you'd make it, what do you mean?
I was taking it day by day. I didn't think I'd see another day.
You were feeling suicidal?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, and it upsets me now because I don't know how I got so bad. I got in a really bad way, babe. You got to remember, if you think I'm innocent or if you don't think I'm innocent, I am innocent.
Conor Benn speaking to Piers Morgan a little earlier on this week. I've got to be honest, I've watched that interview probably about seven times now. and I come away from it just scratching my head as to why Conor Benn has done that interview. I don't think he comes out of it any more positively than he did going into that. I think that was the aim, obviously, to go in there and maybe tell his truth and maybe get the fans back on side a little bit. I think he comes out of it with more questions. It was a little bit incoherent, very contradictory with some of the answers that were in there and some big claims, because as he was kind of just alluding to there, I don't think he actually said it in that particular piece, but he said it throughout the course of the interview where he is pointing an accusation towards the testing process of manufacturing, manipulating and concealing evidence leading to the failed test for the clean boxing program. What did you make of it this week?
Well, first of all, I want to say that you never like to hear anyone saying that they're so affected by it, by the hatred, you know, on social media or whatever it was, hatred aimed towards him, that his mental health was so bad that he was thinking about suicide. And I mean that sincerely. I thought the tenet of the interview was quite ill-advised. I mean, you mentioned the VADA test there that he has issue with, and that's fine. And I think we need to see the evidence, but not we, the Boxing Board of Control, need to see that evidence, and UCAD. But what I think he really fell down on was saying the reason why he wasn't going to the Boxing Board of Control and UCAD for a hearing was based on pride and that they can do one. And I think... There isn't a vendetta against him, I believe.
Not at all.
I've spoken to the Boxing Board of Control, I would say, countless times in the last 5.5, 6 months. And I think he should have his hearing with them. And, you know, he's been advised by, you know, the very, very powerful lawyers who know about these scenarios. And he doesn't accept the WBC explanation for him. So,
but he said in the same interview that he accepts being cleared by the WBC, even though he doesn't accept the reason that they gave.
Like you say, there were lots of contradictions. It wasn't satisfactory. You didn't get to the bottom of it with Conor. And, you know, in this week since then, since Monday, we've got his promoter, Eddie Hearn, pressing on, saying there's going to be a fight in June. So what the problem is, it's not even just about Conor Benn. The whole testing process in boxing is being turned on its head. If there are mistakes made, and mistakes have been made...
Then he's suing the wrong people.
Then, well, there's no point suing the board. They haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
He had clomiphene, and they have a strict liability policy. They had clomiphene in his system in the testing process from... leading up to the Eubank fight, not with the WBC cares. So they had to take that action. And obviously, since it's come out, between the two men on social media, Ben and Eubank, this revelation that Eubank had asked for another million, whether this is all true, I don't know, or whether it's just them going at each other. He wants another million to have the fight. Thank God the fight didn't go ahead, because we all knew that would have been wrong to go ahead. But now... what happens? Does Conor Benn get a license and box in the Middle East, where they probably will license him, and yet America probably won't? The major commissions in America, if he isn't licensed by the Boxing Board of Control and they've taken his license away, I cannot see California, New York, Nevada, the main commissions doing it. You get it from the Wild and Woolly commissions, but it's not satisfactory as it stands at the moment.
No, the whole thing's a mess, and this week, like I said, it was very contradictory what Colin was coming out with Piers Morgan. What have you made of it all, Ben, the whole situation?
I think it's a very messy situation. Rumours of, you know, that the initial test was tested 4 times. A lot of questions are being asked at Conor Benn. Now, I'm not defending anybody. I'm asking sensible questions from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the questions to VADA?
Absolutely. Listen, from what Conor Benn has said, there has to be questions towards the WBC and VADA, the clean boxing program, because what he is saying, he is, like I said, using the terms manufacturing, manipulating, concealing evidence. That then is obviously highlighting something that he believes has happened with the testing process. Those questions have to go back.
And his scientist wasn't allowed to go into the research.
Yeah, so there's a few rumours going around. One of them being that...
This has all come from Conor. Conor said all these things. They're not rumours. He said them.
One of the things is that the initial test was tested 4 times. Why was it tested 4 times? Was the first three not reliable? If the first three were not reliable, why was the fourth reliable?
I don't know whether this is a VADA thing, but I know of labs that do test multiple times, because you're testing for what? 200, 250 different substances?
I think there's different tests, but how long is it apart? I've also heard
a
rumour
that
from the first test to the last test coming up positive, there was 9 days.
Yeah,
9 days of a broken seal. What is the point in sealing your urine and your test?
Well, it's broken down into different parts.
Yeah, but if it's broken, and tested there and then.
But
it was left for 9 days with a broken seal from rumours.
But over 9 days.
Why not just urinate in a bottle and put a screw on and say, go and run away with it?
Mm. But that's what they've done. He's not doing four separate urinations.
But this conversation that we've just been speaking about is all about one test. there's two failed tests. Also with two samples.
Also with clear tests in between that. So they clearly... Mm-hmm. Something wrong. Like I said, I'm not defending anybody, but these are questions I'm thinking, how was these UCAD tests, and from what I'm hearing, a potential VADA test being tested clear in between?
The whole system is broken. There's so many questions for Conor Benn and
his VADA team. Representative needs to come here, it needs to come out and have this debate and answer some of these questions.
All VADA do, just to clarify for anyone listening, I think you probably both know this, they do the test and they take it to a WADA, a World Anti-Doping Agency lab. That's what happens. They don't do the tests. They are just a testing body.
They're the facilitator, and they don't obviously implement any punishment. That has come from they're testing on behalf of the WBC. Then,
so you might then well question WADA the labs
the
over this
the
as well.
B sample of the claim that his representative wasn't allowed to watch the B sample.
Again, that's just come from Conor, hasn't it?
So, but if these are the case, if this isn't the case, then someone needs to come from WADA, VADA, whoever, to say that's not what happened. But if that is the case, why has that happened?
Why hasn't the report been sent to the Boxing Board of Control then?
No, of course, pages. I'm asking questions.
Why aren't we
to
able?
Say,
I don't particularly think they should reveal the test to the pub, the 270 pages to the public at the moment. But it would make sense, surely, to. Give that test if it has that evidence. Give that document.
Yeah.
If it has that evidence that defends Conor and puts him on the right, give it to the Boxing Board of Control and UCAD. Because they're probably going to clear you. Or give you a retrospective ban on strict liability. And there's 6 months up now. When Canelo tested, he went to hair follicles. He went back to the restaurant where they tested the meat there.
I wonder if the reason he's not giving the document to the board is potentially over this legal case of him trying to sue the board. I don't know if that has something to do with it.
It might be, but the reason he gave with Piers Morgan on Monday was that there's a vendetta against me. It's my pride now.
The opening line was that he wanted to prove innocence. He was here because integrity means the most to him. Like you've just said there, if you've got a document there that proves your innocence and the only people that can validate your innocence are the British Boxing Board of Control and UCAD, who are your old licence holder, give them the document.
Yeah, and you've also got the WBC saying there are previous cases of guys testing positive for clomiphene. Give us your nutritional diet, which he gave, which wasn't part of his defence.
Yeah, but I don't agree with
and
that.
Then but I know you don't agree with it, but they've... But let's see...
Because the WBC is supposed to be judging him, and they've offered him the plausible reason, they shouldn't have done that.
But they have. So that what I'm saying is, from Conor Benn's position, the WBC have said it might have got into your system through eggs.
Right.
Think
about what Benn's just saying there. Think about that. Think about the WBC offering up a plausible reason.
But you don't accept it.
To the defendant. No, that's what they've done. The investigator, the judge, the WBC, have offered the plausible reason as to why a test has been failed to the defendant.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Why have they done that? The defendant is saying that the testing process, VADA, is broken. The judge needs the testing process to work because they make millions out of the clean boxing program. So what Conor Benn is saying, you have to investigate it. Even though we all look
100%,
at it.
Fair enough. And the fact that Conor, it would have been very easy for Conor to turn around and say, yep, eggs. The fact that he's refused that makes me say that he must have something there. He must have something there that for him to have,
so put the report and all its findings in front of you.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
I don't see his case to be able to see the Boxing Board of Control. They have acted. I cannot see a judge having ruled that wrong when he tested positive on the 1st of September and they didn't.
I actually agree. I don't think he has a case against the British Boxing Board of Control. You've got to take into consideration his age, the fact that he is young, he was preparing for the biggest fight of his life, it was left to the last minute, whether that was right, wrong, whatever, you know, you have to take these things into consideration, but he must have something in that document, and I'm sure eventually they will end up giving
that to the board. Well, before we came on air tonight, we were talking about when this current crop of heavyweights go, and you and I were talking about the biggest star in British boxing, and it was Conor Benn 6 months ago, on the rise.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Simultaneously landing left hooks and downward goes. Barely 10 seconds to go and the towel comes in from Ben Davison to the protests of Lee Wood. But Ben Davison has decided that Lee Wood is in no fit state to continue.
Just had a little bit of commentary there from a couple of weeks back. A super fight between Lee Wood and Maurizio Lara. You just heard the ending of that contest where Lee Wood seemed to be in relative control of that until he got clipped on the whiskers. And then the man that sat in the studio with us decided to pull his charge out of that fight. Now that the dust has settled on that, how would you feel about that environment? Because it did cause debate, didn't it? Loads of people, obviously, in the aftermath were talking about the action of throwing in a towel. I personally don't think it happens enough in boxing. You obviously made that decision, a split decision in that particular moment. Now the dust has settled, how do you feel?
I feel okay with my decision. It's still always going to be a tough decision that you have to make. Every fighter is going to always feel like, and Lee's come out publicly and defended me and said, you know, he made the right decision. And But deep in his mind, you know, I'm fully aware as a fighter, and he's always going to think, I could have got through that. And the reality is, and I've said to Lee, I can't sit here and say 1,000% you would have or 1,000% you wouldn't have, because the reality is, I don't know. And that was the whole reason why I chucked the towel, because I weren't willing to find out. And the reason that I chucked the towel was because I wasn't sure that he could defend himself. Two of the biggest comebacks that have happened in the last couple of years in the sport, I've been in the corner for Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder the first time, Lee Wood against Michael Conlon the second time. The reason those were different scenarios was I was 100% sure that they had a chance because they could defend themselves. This time, I wasn't confident Lee was able to defend himself, and it wasn't a risk I was willing to take. And people talking about how long was left in the round, sit here and count 10 seconds and let me or anybody else throw some punches at you and see if you think it's a long time. So, you know, I do feel like it was the right decision, tough decision to have to make, and I have to live with that because Lee was so in control, and I felt like he was a couple of rounds away from actually stopping Lara, breaking him down and stopping him. But I also do believe that it's something that we can fix in a rematch.
It's one of the outpouring, the divided opinion afterwards was huge, wasn't it, Adam?
I think the divided opinion comes from the length of time left in the ring. I don't think anybody is against, absolutely not against, a corner calling time on a fight when they believe exactly what Ben just said. I said immediately that's the right decision.
We were here and we thought it was spot on.
I've spoken to lots of people. Said with 10 seconds to go, they automatically then revert to let him ride it out and then assess it whilst he's on the stool. But my argument is exactly what you just said there. It only takes one shot. And at the end of the day, there's nothing worse than a brave corner.
Yes.
If I thought he could defend himself, not a problem. My issue was I thought he would get hit with a shot before he even reacted to what had happened, because I wasn't sure that... He rushed up to get up, and it was actually something that we had had a conversation about, and that's not discrediting Lee, that's actually crediting him. Because
lots of fighters do the same thing.
Yeah, because it's hard, and he actually said to me after, he said, I know that we had that discussion, he said, but just in the moment, I'm in a rush to get up.
And you knew it may happen in the fight.
Yeah, of course. We actually had that discussion down the fight. If you go down, take your time. But also, to the defensively, I thought the count was very quick. Mm. Very quick. He got straight up, rushed up, and the count, you know... Sometimes you haven't got time to actually, okay, let me take a second, gradually get to a knee, then gradually get up. So
Lara was actually, if you recall,
that was actually why I chucked the towel, and he was right behind the referee. The referee wasn't just behind him, he was pushing him out of the way. 100% sure the ref wasn't going to say box on or walk him back.
Yeah. Because I spoke to the boxing board about that, to Robert Smith, and he said, no, our referee would have put Lara back into his corner. That would have taken three or four seconds. I don't agree with that.
I don't agree.
We've spoken about this as well at length, you and I, Ben, not on air. It's an instinct thing, isn't it? And you're still backing your instinct right now because you know that person. You spend... I know I've been to your performance centre so many times. I've been around you an awful lot. We've talked about boxing inside and out, everywhere. You are very close to your fighters, aren't you? And that's the thing about trainers. It's a very unique relationship, isn't it?
Yeah. What I will say is I've had to make three... There's been three times where I thought I may have to make a call here in terms of the towel. And I feel like I've got the three of those right. In my own instinct, I can't argue with any other people's opinions because I can totally understand it.
Yeah.
The other two guys in my corner actually said initially... When you first done it, I thought, too soon. And they both said, once Lee come back to the corner and I saw him then, I thought, actually, right decision. Tony Bellew come out after and said, actually, thought it was the right decision. Carl Froch after said, thought it was the right decision. But I completely understand from people in the crowd.
The thing is, from your point of view, you can live with the wondering of, was it too soon? If it's too late, then it's a completely different thing that you've got to live with for the rest of your life. And you don't want to be in that situation. This game's dangerous enough as it is. So you'd rather be 2 seconds too early than 2 seconds too late in that type
always.
Of call. Always.
For sure. For sure.
On the psychology for Lee as well, and this is the flip, because Lee in his head thinks, I could have survived it, I could have ridden it out, and I could have come back, and I could have beaten that guy just like I did against Michael.
But he can now, because he can take the rematch.
Yeah, but my point is, from a psychological point of view, if Lara flattens him, it's a completely different psychology entering a rematch, because now he's thinking, there's that area that I could have sorted it, and I could have sorted it.
Live to fight another
Your conversation now with him going into a rematch is completely different as if he would have been absolutely flatlined.
Spot on.
And I actually encourage that. I encourage that bit of resistance to... I want Lee to feel like, I could have got through that. He needs to feel like that. He has the right to feel like that because of what he's shown previously, the determination, the desire, the conditioning, the will, the toughness, the grit. He's earned the right to feel that way, and I want him to feel that way. I want him to feel like I made the wrong decision.
But your decision to pull him out gives him a better chance in the rematch. Simple as
it
that,
does,
isn't it?
It does, you know? And I feel like I made the right decision. But I want him to disagree with that decision.
Well, our thanks to Ben Davison for joining us for the majority of the show. But Adam and I then spoke to Frank Warren, who laid out exactly what was going on behind the scenes and what will go on in the next few days to get Fury and Usyk over the line. All our hands are together in prayer that this fight really does get over the line.
Much more closer than we were 24 hours ago. Both the guys have agreed the split, and we've got some couple of bits still to sort out, but I think we're on track for it.
Are we on track for April the 29th, Frank, or is the delay...
That would be the date for the fight if we're doing it. At one stage, I wasn't sure about whether Tyson would be fit for it, but, you know, he's okay. But the bottom line of it is they've both come out now and said what they want to do, and obviously we've got to, you know, get their contracts and so forth signed, so everybody's working on that and to get everything finalised.
What about those... We know that they've agreed 70-30 publicly, but what about the Alexander Usyk 1 million donation to Ukraine, those kind of things? I mean, is that being taken seriously?
Let me just say something about all of this. What does anyone care about how much they're earning? Whatever they're earning, they're earning. At the end of the day, you want to see the fight. The fight, that's it. The rest of it's got nobody. It's nothing to do with anybody else.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is, you know, it's like, what's holding up the fight? Oh, this is holding up. That's holding up. Why is it being held up? And we get all this stuff. They've agreed to fight, so they're going to fight these guys. That's the end. That's the end of it. And all we've got to do now is say finalise a few things. But it's nothing to do with it. It's nobody's business. It's absolutely nobody's business. No more than what you earn or what Adam earns. It's nobody's business. You're over 21. and they can both decide what they want to do.
No, absolutely, but we have waited a long time for this. I say we, that, you know, the boxing world...
Can I
finish what I was going to say? All I was going to say was, everybody wants this fight to happen. The first undisputed heavyweight title fight in the before belt era, the fight that everybody wants to see. No, we haven't had this since Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield in 1999. It's an enormous fight for you, for the boxing public, for the sporting world, for the UK to have at Wembley. It's extraordinary. Two guys in their prime, both undefeated. So that's what I mean, that everybody wanted to see this fight. But it seemed to be that there was a standoff over what each man wants to earn for this and what the percentage was. That's all I'm saying. And we've waited now until it looks like, certainly to the public facing, that it was pushed into action with that deadline, with the WBA saying that Usyk would have to face his mandatory and Daniel Dubois. Not a problem for you, I hasten to add. So I was just trying to make that point, really, Frank.
Right. So it's on. You know, it's, as I say, subject to the contracts being sorted out. You know, everybody's on the same page. So we've got to just keep moving it along, and I'm sure it happened. Everybody wants to see the fight.
Mm.
You know, and everybody should take their hat off to Tyson Fury, because he's the only heavyweight since going back to those days of the great glory days of the Allies, Frazier and Foreman, who has fought the best of around, the best that have been around, the generations that he's been in. He fought without a problem. He fought against... Klitschko, who Klitschko was the best of his generation, went to his backyard and beat him. The longest reigning heavyweight in Deontay Wilder.
Yep.
He went to the States not once but three times and beat him, who had the best knockout record, highest knockout record of any fighter, and went and done a job on him. And now he's stepping up to the guy who's had two wins over Joshua. Mm. And he's got the three belts. So you've got to take your hat off to Tyson. Nobody's done that. You know, we talk about Lennox Lewis and all the fighters. Lennox Lewis never fought Riddick Bowe. He never fought Mike Tyson until Mike Tyson was well past his best. And I'm not taking anything away from Lennox. Lennox was a great fighter. But Tyson, he's fought all these guys at their best.
From a personal point of view, about the magnitude of the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. And I know that obviously in the four belt era, it's very rare that we get to see this. And I know that you've been close in the past with when I think Cal Zaghi was fighting Kessler, technically an undisputed fight. I know that belts weren't necessarily on the line with politics and stuff. And when Kostyuzhu came over, technically those were on the line as well. But from a personal point of view, Frank, you've promoted every major fight. What does it mean to you to be involved in the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world?
Well, you know, once we get this all finalised and so forth, it's great. I mean, I'm delighted. It's, you know, as you say, it's the first time four belts have been on the line. It's the biggest heavyweight fight in God knows how many years. It's the two fighters that are both undefeated, both in their prime. It's a fantastic event, and it'd be the highest grossing event to have ever taken place at Wembley, beating the previous one. Which, and I'm not talking about boxing, I'm talking about a one-off event.
Yeah.
And he beat the previous one, which was last April, which again was Tyson. You know, he's a mega star, there's no doubt about it. And you know, I'm delighted for it. This is a fabulous fight. And again, people should acknowledge in him that we've got a fighter who doesn't duck anybody.
With what Gareth just said there about obviously the WBA situation, what will you do with Daniel in the interim period? Because I've no doubt that he will want to fight too.
Well, they're all going to fight. You know, we've got a good fight on the 15th of April in London, which is Joe Joyce. Mm. He's defending his interim WBO title against Zhang from China, who's a bloody good fighter. And it's a good fight. That's a cracking fight between the two of them. And Daniel will be out sometime at the end of May and June, end of May or June, and again be defending his version of the WBA title. So we're delighted. And both of them, there's no doubt about it, will have their eyes on this fight on the 29th once it's officially announced. And looking to fight the winner.
It's brilliant.
It's mandatory.
Yeah,
mandatory.
It's brilliant that it is still the April the 29th, because that, you know, there were kind of, there were some soundings out there that you may have to push it back a little. When are you optimistic that you might be able to put tickets on sale for that?
When? Well, yeah. we sort that out with Ticketmaster, and they'll be working on that next week, and hopefully we'll have a press conference once everything's we finally get it all signed off and so forth. But the guys in principle have agreed to it, so we move from there.
Just on Joe Joyce, I was lucky enough to spend a little bit of time with him last week whilst I was over in Las Vegas. He's in great spirits, and obviously training incredibly hard for the fight with Zhang. And I just wanted to highlight that particular fight, because I moan all the time about matchmaking and people having tickovers and waiting type of fights. If you're going to have waiting fights, and I know that he's obviously the interim champion and he's waiting for his shot at the top boys, but we're obviously talking about the top boys here, fighting for the championships. This is the type of fight that you're supposed, in my opinion, I mean, I might be wrong with a lot of our audience, but in my opinion, this is the type of fight that you're supposed to be having. Olympic silver medalist, a guy that I think beat Hrgović. I don't know how you saw it, Frank.
He won that fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a fantastic fight. And you've got to take, I know that you're taking your hat off to Tyson and Alexander for making that fight, but you've got to take your hat off to Joe Joyce, because that's the guy that hasn't ducked anybody.
I haven't. I've said it on a number of occasions. For Joe, he could have sat there.
Yep.
He's the mandatory. He's the interim champion. So whatever happens, he's the next guy in when the WBO title has to be defended by the winner of the fight on the 29th. He could have sat there and taken the easy options, but he hasn't. And he stepped up and fighting a guy who, as we just said, we all feel, and I think everybody in boxing felt, that he beat Hrgović, who's now the IBF number one.
So,
you know, this is a big fight for Joe. And Joe's what he says he is. He is what's on the label. He's a juggernaut. He doesn't give a monkey's who he's in there with. Doesn't duck anybody.
And finally this week, we spoke to O'Hara Davis, fresh off his victory over Lewis Ritson, an 11th round stoppage last week. Super lightweight, of course, really looking for a WBA world title shot this year. He says it's a couple of fights away, but there's definitely a new maturity about Davis. Here's what he had to tell us.
Next fight, I want the world champion. I know that Alberto Pello is fighting against. He's fighting against Rowley for it. Next fight, and then I believe that the winner will have to face Ismael Brosso. Then I'll be made as the mandatory for the WBA, as far as I'm concerned. So we're looking at towards the end of this year, early next year. I should be fighting for the world title, and fight I believe I can win.
Do you feel hard done by, O'Hara? Great to have you on the show, by the way, that you've got to wait and you're ranked two with the WBA, and obviously you mentioned the champion Alberto Puello, that you've got to wait for, is it Barroso, did you say, and Romero? And Romero's seventh in the ranking, so
yeah.
Is that, does that, what do you do in the interim is what we want to know, really.
I do feel hard done by. I believe that my world title shot, it should have already come, it should have already been, but you know, I'm a fighter. If I'm as good as I think I am, I will get past anyone that they put in front of me. And, you know, in the meantime, I believe I might have a keep busy fight during the summer. I spoke to my manager. I believe I'll be having a keep busy fight in the summer, just because I don't want to be a bit too inactive and get any ring rust. So once that shot comes, I'll be ready for it.
People might not know this, O'Hara, but the only two you've lost to in your 25 fight career is Jack Catterall and Josh Taylor. And we know how highly we rate them. Yeah. So,
you know what?
Yeah.
I believe that I'm very underrated. You know, I usually look online on what everyone says about me. I'm always online. I'm on Twitter. I see everything that they say about me. And a lot of people say that I'm trash, I'm garbage, I'm this, I'm that. And I feel like a lot of people base my talent on how they feel about me. Just because they don't like me as a person, because of things I might have done or things I might have said, it doesn't mean that I'm not a good fighter.
Well, you said something that brought your name down, which you didn't understand at the time. We won't go into it now. It was a cultural thing related to up north. But you've changed. I think you've matured, haven't you?
I wouldn't say mature. I feel like I've just become more of myself instead of trying to be another person that I'm not. You know, I was for most of my boxing career, I've been influenced by the wrong coaches, the wrong managers, boxing promoters, and I've been pressured to be someone that I'm not, and to act in a way that isn't me, just for the sake of helping to sell their show. And when things went wrong, I got abandoned. And, you know, I look back on my boxing career and now I'm more older, I'm much more wiser. And I'm like, I just want to be myself. I want to be me.
Do you know something?
Whether that helps sell fights or not, whether that sells fights or not, I'm not going to act in a way that isn't me.
No, but you seem more mature. Seem more mature.
Yeah, and I was going to say...
I mean that sincerely.
Yeah, and I was going to say a very similar thing. Last week, O'Hara, obviously I observed loads of your pre-fight interviews and your post-fight interview, which I thought was really, really classy. Listen, maybe you don't want to use the word mature, but the word mature most certainly would be my assessment of your whole fight week last week, the way that you were during camp, obviously the way that you've dealt with it post-fight.
And if it's yourself, be yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
This is you, brilliant.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I am a bit more mature now, and that comes with age, it comes with experience.
The performance was mature as well. The performance was a mature performance too.
Yeah. You know what? I won't lie. On that fight, I worked my absolute hardest. I just knew that if it's a fight that I don't win, if I don't come through this fight, my boxing career, it would most probably be done. I knew if I didn't win the fight, I'd probably have to give it up. And, you know, boxing's been my goal and my dream. And I've been doing it ever since I was young. And I don't want to have to give up my goal and my dream. So I worked absolutely. I done everything I could in camp. Everything I could and more. I left no stone unturned. I wasn't going out. I sacrificed as much as I could just to make sure that I get the win. And I feel like it paid off well. I felt very comfortable in there. I felt fit. I felt strong. And that's the way I've got to train for every fight.
Well, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our TalkSport Boxing YouTube channel and subscribe to this podcast every week. You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast. I'm Gareth Davis. We'll see you next week.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.